This is The Guardian.
Today, it's beginning to feel a lot like March 2020, but with some crucial differences. What will Omicron do to the UK? Just as we were gearing up for a Christmas we hoped would be normal, or as normal as it gets right now, it emerged.
There's growing international concern about a new variant of COVID which could be more transmissible than previous strains and more resistant to vaccines. The UK has suspended direct flights to...
Extremely transmissible, spreading easily despite vaccines, and able to infect those who have already been sick. Omicron has upended hopes that for those who have been vaccinated, the era of lockdowns, restrictions, cancelled dinners, parties might be over. If it wasn't clear before, it is now. We're not out of the pandemic yet. Every day, we're learning more about Omicron and seeing its impact in record new cases in London and across the country. The UK Cabinet held an emergency meeting on Monday, with people including the government's chief medical advisor, Chris Whitty, to consider new restrictions and decided they weren't quite ready to make a decision yet.
In view of the balance of risks and uncertainties, we agreed that we should keep the data from now on under constant review. And unfortunately, I must say to people, we will have to reserve the possibility of taking further action to protect the public.
While the government dithers, and Number 10 fights off allegations of yet another gathering held during lockdown, the virus spreads and hospitals brace for what's coming. From The Guardian, I'm Michael Safi. Today in focus, what the next few weeks, the Omicron wave, could look like. So, Nicola, at this point, how are you feeling?
Quite concerned, really. Very concerned, actually, about where we are with Omicron. And, you know, I've got a bit of annual leave for a few days and I'm finding it very, very hard to switch off from the situation at all, to be honest.
Yeah, if no other reason than we've given you a call to come and talk to us again. And
it's a pleasure.
I don't want to be rude here, but we were hoping that we wouldn't have to get you back on to tip so soon. And yet, here we are.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very fast-moving situation.
Yeah, you're the Guardian science correspondent. And those previous times we had you on, it was already beginning to feel like something we've already lived through. We all suddenly know lots of people who are getting COVID. And in terms of the sheer number of cases, it feels like in some ways, after nearly two really long, difficult years, we're right back to where we were on March 2020, or even worse. Is that how you see it?
No, I mean, we're in a different situation to March 2020. I mean, you know, let's be clear, things are different. We have the vaccines, which is amazing, fantastic scientific development, the creation of these vaccines, which have, you know, really offered so much protection to so many people. We have a much, much better understanding of the virus. We know more about how interventions work, how things like masks work. We know more about how the virus spreads. We know the importance of airborne transmission. We've got much better testing capacity. We've got fantastic genomic surveillance. You know, we really are in a different place to where we were in March 2020. But that doesn't mean that the current situation isn't concerning.
Okay, so the biggest weapon in this arsenal that we now have to fight Omicron is these vaccines. What do we know about how effective they are in stopping the spread of this variant, or at least stopping severe disease and death?
We know now that two doses of COVID vaccines are not enough to protect you against symptomatic infections. So that means not just catching the virus, but then sort of showing symptoms. So if we look at data from the UK Health Security Agency, that's the UK HSA, they've recently released data which shows that, you know, you really get very little protection against symptomatic infection with two doses of AstraZeneca jab. For the Pfizer-BioNTech jab, protection against symptomatic infection looks to be sort of below 40%.
Well, that seems to make really clear that booster shots are not just an added bonus. I mean, they seem like a really essential part of just getting to the basic level of vaccination now.
Yeah, so that data from the UK HSA suggested that if you have a booster that protection against symptomatic infection goes up to somewhere between sort of 70-75%. So having a booster really does give you a boost, you know, really does give that protection a shot in the arm. Again, sorry, terrible cliches, but it makes a big difference. So the jabs are really, really important. If you're offered jabs, you know, you really, the best thing you can do is go and take them. They do offer you protection against the variants. The booster jab is super, super important though against Omicron, because it really is necessary in order to give you that increased protection, not only against, you know, infection, symptomatic infection, but also against more severe outcomes.
Okay, so the good news is the knowledge of how to fight this virus that we've built up over the past 2 years, that all holds up. The vaccines are not completely evaded by Omicron. If you have a booster especially, you can still protect yourself from severe disease and maybe even catching the virus. So is there any more good news, or should we just move on to the other column?
Any other good news? Well, I have to say that, I mean, the problem that we've got, and in fact, you know, Chris Whitty said this, you know, I'm going to paraphrase him here because I can't remember exactly his wording, but he basically said, you know, we don't know much about Omicron, but what we do know is all bad. I have to say that there isn't a lot of very good news.
And I suspect this is probably in the bad news column, but earlier on in the Omicron outbreak, there was a sense that for whatever reason, this variant was less severe. There were fewer people ending up in hospital. You just didn't get quite as sick if you got it. Do we still think that might be the case?
So the problem with all this talk about it being sort of more mild disease, it's sort of several problems there. First of all, it's extrapolating from South Africa to the situation in the UK. And South Africa has several sort of features of the population and the situation there, which means that it's actually not that easy to just go, right, what's happening there is going to happen here in exactly the same way. The other thing that's really important is that obviously both with past infections and with the vaccine programs, you know, there is now a level of immunity. Vaccines can protect you against severe disease, so you may be less likely to see it. As Chris Whitty has said, it's not surprising that it appears to be more mild than previous waves because we have those sorts of factors at play. The other thing, though, that really matters is, as Chris Whitty again pointed out recently in a press briefing, even if there is sort of lower severity, let's say you get half the rate of people going to hospital with Omicron compared with previous variants, as Chris Whitty pointed out, if twice as many people get infected, you're still in the same boat in terms of the number of hospitalizations. So that's why the fact Omicron is spreading like wildfire is so concerning. It will just hit so many people that even if a smaller proportion end up in hospital, the numbers could still be very, very large and the health service could still be overwhelmed.
You said that Omicron is spreading like wildfire. It feels like it's worth brushing up on this idea from the early stages of the pandemic of exponential growth. Can you remind us, how does that work?
It is something which is very much not necessarily intuitive. It's something which a lot of people kind of struggle quite a lot to kind of really understand just how fast a small number can reach a very, very large number when it comes to exponential growth. You know, let's think about a chessboard. Okay, this is a quite classic way of thinking about exponential growth. You've got a chessboard, okay? So you've got 64 little squares in front of you, black and white squares. If we were to place a grain of rice on the first square, and we're going to move across the chessboard, and for each square, we're going to put twice the number of grains of rice as the previous square. So the first square, you've got one grain of rice. The second square, you've got two. The next square, you've got four. The next square, you've got eight. The next square, you've got 16. Now, these still sound like quite low numbers, but bear with. Next square, you've got 32, and we're moving around this chessboard, okay? Now, if you were to keep going, then you will actually end up with, and this is going to... This is going to be quite difficult to say, but the total number of grains that you will end up on your chessboard is 18 quintillion, 446 quadrillion, 744 trillion, 73 billion, 709, sorry, I can't even go on. It's enormous, okay? We're talking about an absolutely phenomenal number of grains of rice.
It sounds like a lot.
It's an awful lot. You probably wouldn't be able to get it on your chessboard, let's put it that way. I mean, at first it all seems very innocuous. Very, very quickly you're in very, very large numbers. And that is exactly what is happening right now. We're seeing doubling times of this Omicron virus of under 2 days in most regions of the country. You know, in some areas, latest data from the UK HSA suggests, you know, we could be looking at about 1.3 days in the northwest, about 1.5 in the West Midlands. So very, very fast doubling. So that means that if you replace these grains of rice with number of infections, well, the situation is really, really very serious indeed.
And are scientists modelling how this will actually play out? Like, what kind of numbers are people looking at for just the weeks ahead of us?
We've had estimates of about 1 million infections a day towards the end of this month. You know, we're really looking at really, really high numbers.
And what would a wave of that extraordinary scale actually look like once it hits the UK's health system?
Well, that is the million-dollar question. And we don't, you know, because we still have these sort of question marks around severity and so on, we don't know for sure what that's going to mean in terms of the proportion of infections that end up needing hospital care. But if we look at what the scientific advisory groups have been saying, so they released some minutes over the weekend. They've said that basically there are likely to be between 1,000 and 2,000 hospital admissions per day in England by the end of the year. But, you know, we could then end up with a peak of at least 3,000 hospital admissions per day. Now, that's the best case scenario, 3,000 hospital admissions per day. And some models suggest in the worst case scenario, we could be looking at, you know, up to 10,000 hospitalizations a day. Now, if we put that into context, at the height of the alpha wave in the UK last winter, so we all remember last winter was absolutely ghastly, there were about 4,500 hospitalizations per day and the NHS was absolutely slammed, use a technical term. So, you know, if we're looking at least 3,000 hospitalizations a day, sort of best case scenario, 10,000 worst case scenario, obviously there's a big difference there in terms of the numbers, but nonetheless, that's still looking very, very bad for healthcare services.
Nicola, we're just a few days before Christmas, and right now, as we're speaking, the UK government has yet to issue any official new restrictions, though this past weekend, SAGE, the Scientific Advisory Group for Emergencies, did release new guidance. Now, I'll read some of it here. If one person in a close-knit group, for example, a household or work team, tests positive, there's a significant chance that others are already infected, they write. If one person from the group tests positive to an event or gathering, then none should attend. This is especially important in the festive season when family events may increase the risk of infecting the elderly or vulnerable. Given all of that, do you think more restrictions are likely to be coming our way?
I think that there's a really, really strong argument that we need more measures. And you know, some have said we shouldn't be thinking about these as restrictions. We should be thinking of these as protections. You know, they're measures which are needed to protect public health, to protect healthcare services. They're not sort of party pooping restrictions. They are measures which are necessary. Nobody wants to have to do this. But I think if you look at the data, there's really a clear argument. And the experts there are clearly making a very, very strong argument. And in fact, you know, they've said that, you know, action really does need to be taken sooner rather than later. And the booster vaccination program, whilst we've talked about how important it is to get boosters, it won't affect transmission. They've said it won't affect transmission and severe mild disease in time to mitigate those hospitalizations the rest of 2021. And you've got to remember that booster doses are brilliant, but it takes about a week to 10 days before you get those sort of levels of protection we were talking about from the booster jabs. So, you know, even though you can, you know, really ramp up the boost program, and it's great that we're doing so, it really is the case that this is a bit of a race against time. And just to kind of, you know, just to go back, I'd like to just mention something that Dr. Susan Hopkins, who's the chief medical advisor for the UK Health Security Agency, said when she was talking to journalists about the Omicron situation. And she said the biggest worry is that if we have very high numbers of people getting infected at the same time, with the doubling rate we're seeing at the moment, then it, in terms of the virus, will find all those people who've had less immune responses, those people who have yet to get their booster dose or have not been vaccinated yet. And she said, remember, there are still significant numbers of people in the population, more than 5 million in England, who have not yet received a single dose of the jab. Now, obviously, you know, those numbers in terms of first jabs are going up as well, but that's still a very substantial number of people. If you look at those groups, there's a lot of people in those groups who are vulnerable to this virus.
I mean, that's incredibly bleak. It sounds like every single crack in the country's immunity is going to be discovered by this variant.
That's a really good way of thinking about it, actually. Yeah, I mean, I think that's really the concern.
At the same time as weighing up what to do about all of this, the Prime Minister's also dealing with the continued fallout from yet another Partygate story. Over the weekend, The Guardian published a photo of another gathering that was held at Number 10. In the garden with Boris Johnson and his wife were up to 17 members of his staff seen drinking wine and eating pizza. At the time, social mixing between households was limited to people who could only meet outdoors and at a distance of at least 2 metres. Does it worry you at all that maybe some people will look at those pictures and look at all of this coverage and perhaps be less inclined to follow the rules to the letter?
That can really affect public trust in governments. It can really affect how people feel about politicians and about, you know, this idea of instead of us all being in the boat, in the same boat together, it's, you know, it's them and us. It's one rule for that group of individuals and another rule for the rest of us. And, you know, people were really, really complying with extremely difficult measures. You know, people weren't able to attend funerals. They weren't able to say goodbye to loved ones in hospital. You know, there are a lot of sacrifices that people have made in order to stick to public health measures. You know, if we look at what's happened, you know, what people have said before in terms of these sorts of events. I mean, you know, obviously the classic example was last year with Dominic Cummings' trip to Barnard Castle. Studies have shown that really did impact people's sort of trust in the government at a time when we really needed that, you know, to have confidence in what the government was doing. However, nonetheless, it's the vast majority of people were still sticking to the rules. So I think that there could be two things happening at once: loss of trust in the government and in leadership, and anger and lots of other emotions there. But that doesn't necessarily mean that everyone's going to then stop complying with measures that are brought in, particularly if it's quite clear why these measures have been brought in.
Coming up, as Omicron spreads, what should we do about Christmas? Nicola, you've told us the situation in the UK, where there are no new restrictions despite yesterday's emergency cabinet meeting. What about elsewhere in the world?
I mean, Omicron's on the rise in many, many countries. I mean, it's spread incredibly fast. And that's true of our neighbours in Europe as well. And, you know, we've seen several countries have taken really very drastic measures. The Netherlands have imposed a nationwide lockdown. So all of their non-essential stores, bars, restaurants will be closed until the 14th of January, starting from Sunday just gone. If we look at Denmark is seeing a lot of Omicron as well. They've got very, very good sequencing over there. They've seen a sharp rise in Omicron as well. They've closed their theatres, concert halls, museums. Ireland has imposed an 8 p.m. curfew on various settings, so pubs and bars and so on. And, you know, I think that really this sort of trajectory, this rapid growth in Omicron is being seen in many, many countries. And it's clearly alarmed a lot of people and measures are being taken.
There's something so depressing and exhausting to hear about the resumption of lockdowns, of curfews, of travel restrictions. I think partly because we all felt like we bought into a bargain here, which was that before vaccines, we need to lock down and protect ourselves and isolate. But after vaccines, life would return to normal, maybe not quickly, but eventually. And that hasn't happened. And I wonder how you understand this phase of the pandemic. Like, how should we understand what is happening right now?
I see what you're saying. But I mean, if you think about it, until quite recently in England, at least, you know, basically, there are very, very, very few, if any, restrictions. You know, we were able to go about daily life pretty much as we were before. And, you know, so we did get to that point. We've always known that a new variant could cause big problems. We know that, and that has been a risk. It's all been cited time and time again that, you know, we have to be aware that a new variant could change the situation and potentially do so very rapidly. I think that what we have to realise with COVID is that, you know, COVID will be around for a very, very long time. Perhaps it's, you know, going to be with us forever. And there will be moments like this where we have these twists and turns, which are really nasty I was going to say nasty surprise. I said we have known that new variants can crop up and that this is a potential danger. We were aware of that. So a nasty almost surprise, I think, is probably the best way to say it. But that doesn't mean that we're necessarily going to be facing this year after year after year. You know, work is underway to develop vaccines which are sort of less targeted to one particular variant, which will be able to tackle a broader range of variants and therefore mean that we have that much better protection against this sort of situation happening. So I don't think we should assume that we're going to be in this boat year after year after year, that, you know, we are, I say, only 2 years into a pandemic. Actually, it's not, we're not that far through this. And I think that, you know, we have to all kind of realize that this is unfortunately going to be a slog. It's going to be a slog.
So a pandemic isn't something that begins and ends. It kind of peters out over years in kind of an uncertain way.
I think it's fair to say it doesn't end when we just want it to end.
Nicola, as we said, the government has issued new guidance, but that's just guidance. They aren't official restrictions. How should listeners weigh their own choices this week and over the holidays? Like, how are you thinking about your own holiday plans?
I think that people are facing a very, very difficult choice this Christmas about what to do. You know, is it enough to make sure that you're boosted and take your lateral flows before you meet up and keep your windows open and so on? Is that enough, or should they avoid mixing altogether? There's that sense of, you know, this Christmas was supposed to be different. You know, lots of people missed out on meeting up with their loved ones last Christmas. The hope was this Christmas will really make up for that. And so, of course, this sense that you know, may be in jeopardy is, of course, extremely upsetting, frustrating, difficult for people to come to terms with. And I completely understand that. Clearly, this Christmas again is not going to be normal. And I think that, you know, we can only hope that next year might be different.
Nicola, despite everything, Merry Christmas. Hope you have a great break.
Yes, and to you too.
That was Nicola Davis, a science correspondent for The Guardian. Thanks very much to her. And you can keep up with her reporting and all our coverage of COVID-19 at theguardian.com. And while you're there, we'd love you to donate to our Christmas charity appeal, which this year is focused on climate justice and helping those who have had their lives, homes and whole communities devastated by the climate crisis. Donate today at theguardian.com/charity2021. And that is it for today. This episode was produced by Josh Kelly. Sound design by Axel Kakutier. The executive producers are Maithili Rao and Phil Maynard. Back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.